Professor Horner, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
That's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Now, as I mentioned, SETI was set up in 1985, but why don't you tell me a little bit about it and about how it goes about searching for extraterrestrial intelligence?
Well, the whole idea is that we assume, because we know no extraterrestrial intelligence, we don't even know extraterrestrial life, so we've got to start somewhere. So we make a guess that if there is intelligent life out there, and if it gets to the point where it can communicate with the cosmos, it will do the same kind of things we will do. It will follow the same kind of route. Now, if you were looking at the Earth from a distant star, how would you tell if we had life? How would you tell if you were looking at the sun, this star, way off in the sky, that there was life here? Well, it would depend when you were looking. If you were looking more than, say, 100 years ago, you would have struggled to find something that told you definitively you had intelligent communicative life. If you had good enough instruments, you could have found evidence of life. You could have found that the atmosphere was doing weird things. And that's the kind of work a lot of us astronomers are doing. We're trying to find evidence of any life out there in the cosmos. But for 4,500 million years and change, if you looked at the Earth, you wouldn't have found a sign of intelligent communicative life. That all changed in the 1900s with the invention of radio and television. Basically, we started shouting our existence to the cosmos, yelling out into the void with these omnidirectional broadcasts, sending radio waves into space. And so the thinking is, if other species do the same thing, then maybe we can listen in. If we get radio telescopes big enough and we look around the sky, pointing at one star after another, keep listening, we're looking for anything that's odd, maybe we'll catch essentially a bit of a TV show like Neighbours broadcast from another star system with aliens in the leading roles. Now, I mean, that's a bit of a blasé way to take it, but it's essentially looking for a needle in a haystack when you don't really know what a needle looks like or a haystack. So you've got to make some guesses. And here the guess is that other species will do the same thing we do, and we'll therefore be able to listen in. Now, the challenge is that if you look at how we're doing things now, people are no longer broadcasting quite as extravagantly at all frequencies, because we now can do things more efficiently. We can broadcast point to point. We can listen through cables, through the internet. And so there's an argument that maybe that loud period of shouting into the void is actually fairly short-lived. And what we've had for the last 100 years has been the equivalent of a toddler in a cave having a tantrum and screaming out into the void, and we're now learning to whisper. So SETI is really challenging. It's one of those things where the likelihood of making the discovery is very low, because we simply don't know if there's anything out there. We don't know if they'll communicate the way we do. We don't know if they'll be broadcasting. We don't know if they'll be aiming a broadcast at us. So the likelihood is low, but the reward is really high. If we do make that discovery, it's incredibly important and really exciting. So it's still something well worth investing in, especially because the data that you get, the science that you do, teach you a lot of other things as well about the things we're looking at. Mm. And also because in doing this, you have to develop new technology, you have to push the boundaries of what we can achieve. And that technology too then kind of trickles down into different areas. So it's one of these things where I think SETI is a search that will probably not deliver anything solid in terms of alien TV series. It might, but it will deliver a whole heap of other benefits as well. So it's still really worthwhile.
Okay. Now, tell us, have we had any success? I mean, what has SETI sort of achieved? Have we had any success whatsoever? And sort of what have we learned?
Well, we haven't found anything definitive yet. We've had a few cases where things have been seen that people didn't understand. And of course, that means there's a possibility that it could be aliens. You look at it and you go, well, we've never seen anything like this before. We've never predicted anything like this before. What could it be? And what happens then is a process of elimination. You've got to look at different possible explanations and rule them out. And of course, we would know if any of them actually had been aliens. They've all turned out to be false alarms. But every false alarm teaches us something new. There was a really good case just a couple of years ago where people did a search. They found more than a million unusual signals, whittled them down to the best 100, then the best 10, then the best one. The last one was really hard to explain, until it turned out, I think it was like a microwave going off in another room or something like this, that was shielded, but there was still enough of a signal to confuse the receiver. And, you know, that sounds like, oh, well, that's really rubbish. But the flip side is, by doing that, we gradually improve, so we filter out all those things that can interfere. We get great astronomical discoveries along the way. We spot things that are unusual that we never expected. And that leads to us improving our knowledge of the cosmos. And then eventually, you know, potentially, we'll get that signal.
Okay. Now, tell us about sort of some of the projects that SETI have running at the moment, and what's sort of most promising in terms of actually making this discovery that the SETI is there to hopefully make one day?
There's a whole lot of stuff going on, and it's one of those things of where looking for something unexpected because we don't really know what to look for, because we've only got one example of life on Earth. You know, that's the only kind of life we know of in the cosmos. And we only know of one example of communicative intelligent life, and that's, of course, us. And we're having this conversation at the minute that's been broadcast. Maybe some aliens will listen in thousands of years' time, thousands of light years away, to this little segment and go, they didn't know what they were talking about, most likely. That's probably what they'll say. But we're trying to do all that, and that means there's a lot of different tricks being tried. One of the main ways people do this is listening at radio wavelengths. So that's like tuning into the radio. They'll look at different types of radio waves at places where the universe is more transparent, so signals can go further, or places that are unusual for some reason, because that might be a natural place to put your broadcast so that people can tune in. One of the places that this has really benefited Australian astronomy is actually to do with the wonderful radio telescope, the Dish, down at Parkes. So a few years ago, the previous government wanted to close that. They wanted to mothball it because it was viewed as being no longer worth the investment. You know, it wasn't producing enough. And that opened the door for a thing funded by a wealthy American billionaire philanthropist to start a project called Breakthrough Listen. And they're paying quite a large sum of money to buy part of the time of that telescope. I think it's about 40% of the time. So a radio telescope can listen all day, all night. The sunlight doesn't cause a problem. So that telescope is staring at the sky doing awesome astronomy all day, every day. But 40% of the time, it's specifically tasked to listen out for alien signals, to look at potential targets, build up a catalogue, and then see what we can learn. And Breakthrough Listen has been really useful, not just because of the science it's delivered, but also because it's delivered that funding that's kept that particular facility open and running and delivering other amazing science as well. One of the other things I think is really interesting is there's a lot of thought being put into not signals from aliens, not radio signals, but actually the search for extraterrestrial artifacts. So instead of looking for aliens by their broadcasts, we're instead looking for them by the things they build. And this is getting a bit down the science fiction route as well. The idea that technologies far beyond our own, for civilizations far more advanced than ours, could do things like build massive structures around stars to gather the stars light, to give them energy, just like we're building solar panels all across Australia, but on a much more massive industrial scale. And people are proposing the most wacky kind of technologies you can imagine as things that aliens could do if they were more advanced than we are. And they're proposing them not with any real expectation that they're going to be real, but instead because if you think about something like that, you can work out what it would look like. And we've got, in the coming years, an absolute profusion of incredible new astronomical tools coming online, from things like the James Webb Space Telescope that can look at a few things at once with incredible detail and incredible depth, to things like the Vera Rubin Observatory that will survey the entire sky once a week, or the Square Kilometre Array. So we've got these incredible new tools that are going to be delivering unimaginable amounts of data back to us, looking at everything. And what astronomers are trying to do is saying, we don't think we'll ever find these things. We think they're a bit crazy. But if we don't know what to look for, then we will never know what we're seeing if we see something unusual. So they're coming up with all these crazy hypotheses, working out what they would look like so that we know if we find something weird, we can rule them out. And of course, the ultimate extreme of that is we find something weird and, hey, look, we can't rule it out. Therefore, we found something we never imagined. Isn't that cool?
Okay. One of the theories that I've heard that, you know, attempts to explain why we have not yet found evidence of extraterrestrial life is, I believe they call it sort of the fire in the forest theory, where everyone else out there, if the universe is one big dark forest, everyone out there is keeping dark. Earth, we're sending out these signals and we're looking for life. We're lighting this fire and revealing our location to potential alien civilizations. Is this dangerous? Does this put us in a precarious position? Are we, you know, revealing our location where potentially other civilizations out there have sort of learnt the better and learnt not to do that in the universe?
I really like to think that that isn't going to be an issue. So that idea was popularized, of course, by the fabulous series of novels, The Three Body Series, and by Xixing Liu, Chinese author. And that's where that idea has really come from, the dark forest. And I probably don't think it would hold much water. Firstly, I don't really think it's worth worrying about because we've already shouted. So So it's a bit too late to claw back the broadcast of the Queen's Jubilee back in the 1930s or the Berlin Olympics. Mm. You know, that information's already raced out into space. But there's many reasons I don't think we're particularly threatened by the existence of aliens if they're out there. Firstly, the universe has an extreme amount of real estate that is vacant. So why would they come here and try and dispossess us? Especially because they'll have grown up on a planet that is not the Earth. So therefore, the Earth will not be the Goldilocks world for them. They will have grown up somewhere different. So Mars would probably be just as attractive as the Earth. And every star has planets. Those planets have moons. There's a huge amount of empty real estate out there to keep us safe from them. The other thing is, I've seen some really kind of compelling arguments about the fact that the most aggressive species would probably wipe themselves out before they became a threat to others on the galactic scale. And of course, we nearly managed this a few times during the 1970s, 1980s, during the Cold War with nuclear weapons. And there is a thought that there is a great filter. There are possibly many great filters that stop life developing further. But one of them is species developing weaponry before they've developed culturally enough to be able to cope with the consequences of that weaponry and getting rid of themselves. So that kind of points to the fact that things out there may well actually be less aggressive than us or more controlled. But this is all speculation. I mean, it's that whole thing of, and it's why science fiction is so popular. We only know of one example of life. We only know of one example of intelligent life. So we can imagine anything. You know, we can imagine intelligent hydrogen clouds playing tennis with planets. But the reality is we have to base our exploration, at least initially, on what we know can exist because we know that it does exist here on Earth. And so that's focusing the direction we're looking. But the main thing we're looking for is just something unexpected that cannot be explained any other way. When you rule out the improbable, then the impossible is all that's left.
Mm. It's fascinating. Well, it sounds just like a, you know, something that's just enthralling to be a part of. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for. John T. Horner, thank you so much for joining me here on The Daily.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.